You're very welcome along to the RTE Rugby Podcast, a bonus RTE Rugby Podcast after Ireland made a brilliant start to the 2025 Women's Rugby World Cup. A 42-14 point win against Japan at Franklin's Gardens in Northampton. Niamh Briggs and Hannah Tyrrell have raced across from the RTE studio to join us on the podcast couch on our brand new podcast studio to give a bit of instant reaction to the game, and we'll run through some of the key points. To start with, folks, I'll just run through, I suppose, the story of the game. Bonus point win to start Pool C this afternoon. Aside from a brief wobble early in the second half, never really in doubt. Amy Lee Costigan's try inside the first few minutes, followed up by Niamh Jones, 14-0 after just 10 minutes. Bavin Parsons goes over, makes it 21-0. Japan pull a try back, but the bonus point wrapped up just before halftime through Fiona Chute. Then early in the third quarter, Ireland looked sloppy. That's where the game may have been in the balance. Japan pull it back to 28-14. And then on 54 minutes, the game is decided. It looks like Japan are about to score a try and make it a 7-point game. But Eve Higgins intercepts 5 metres from her own line. Coast-to-coast try to make it 34-14 and game over. Enya Breen, I should say, added one more try after that, and Ireland saw it out pretty easily. Niamh and Hannah, a comfortable enough win for Ireland, a fast start to the game, no injuries on the face of it, pretty much the perfect start.
Yeah, overall, like a really, really positive start for this group who are looking to build on the momentum they've had kind of over the last while. And they were all really excited to get into it, and they kind of showed in the game, and they all talked about a fast start and they got that straight away. So that gives them huge confidence going into the game. And obviously by halftime, having the bonus point wrapped up, you know, they're able to maybe take their foot off the gas a little bit, and maybe that showed with that sloppiness in the second half. But overall, hugely, hugely positive. Couple of weaknesses or little fixes for them leading into that Spain game, but not much more you can ask really of them.
It's worth emphasising as well, Niamh, like there was pressure coming into it because the schedule's been very kind to them. They have their two most winnable games first up and the opportunity to be through to a quarter final before a ball's kicked against New Zealand in the final pool game. There's been injuries since the Six Nations, important players ruled out. There was a defensive coach change as well a few months ago, which would have disrupted things. There were questions around this team, even though it had been a pretty positive 12, 18 months coming up towards the World Cup. So there was a bit of pressure on them coming into this game, particularly to start the way they did in those first 10 minutes. Like, it just took so much pressure off them, even for the next week.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, I thought they haven't shied away over the whole summer around getting after that quarterfinal spot. They've been very vocal about it. Scott has, the players have, and I love that about them. They talked a lot today around the fast start, and that was something that they really wanted to get after. It's almost like if they put it out there, they're held accountable to it and they want to get after it. And they really did that today. I thought they played some brilliant rugby in the first half. And I don't even think that there was a like massive drop-off in the second half. I think if you flip it around and think about what the Japanese would have been tackling about at halftime, they would have talked around intensity and they would have talked around line speed. And they would have... So, like, they were always going to come out and have a little bit of a stronger start. I just think they were completely shell-shocked from how quick Ireland started. And so to give Ireland their due, I thought they defended really well in large parts of that second half. And you know, when they needed to, they were able to turn the screw to go up another little level to be able to get over for tries. And I think it was either Sam or Adele said it afterwards. There's still another couple of gears in them. And I think that's probably the most pleasing part around this. There's still way more in them, which is such an exciting thing for such a young group.
Yeah, and there are minor little issues that we'll get into as well. Like the lineout in the first half in particular was very hot and cold. It was 8 out of 12 at halftime, 2 overthrows, 2 crooked throws. And I think Fiona Coughlan on commentary talked a lot about the defence and how they were making big tackles and getting off the line quickly, but leaving a lot of space out wide, which other teams can take advantage of. But we'll focus in on the good stuff to start off with. And I suppose straight up, we just have to talk about those 2 tries in the first 10 minutes. Ireland have had a little bit of a habit in the last 12 months of having some games where they don't start matches well and they take a little while to get into it. Notably the warm-up games, and that Scotland one in particular as well. But we could see it in the opening couple of minutes, Hannah. Big carries from the likes of Linda Dugang, Ruth Campbell, Niamh O'Dowd, just sucking in defenders bit by bit. And then they get the ball out wide to Amy Lee Costigan. Hands off a defender, runs in for a try. What a perfect start. And then to follow that up as well with another. It just gave them a brilliant buffer from which to kind of map the rest of the game around.
Yeah, just came in with a huge burst of energy and kind of that positivity that they were going to go out there and show what they can do. And they were full of confidence, had really good hands. And even before Lee scored after like 4 minutes or so, Aveen Riley had a chance right on the try line to try and dot down. It just didn't happen for them. But they were all over Japan in the first couple of minutes and it really showed. And as you said, it allowed those nerves ease a little bit and just kind of ease into the game. And they were well worth their kind of two tries. And, you know, they had the majority of ball possession the first 10 minutes as well. And it was brilliant to see. And I suppose it just gave them that kind of relaxed nature then to play the rugby that they know they're capable of and that they've been practicing all summer.
Do you think as well, Niamh, then, like that they were playing in the right areas of the pitch, like using Dan O'Brien the right way in terms of territory? She was brilliant off the tee as well, which we'll mention in a little bit, but not overplaying the ball forwards, taking direct carries, just sucking in defenders bit by bit and creating space and not overcomplicating a game.
Yeah, absolutely. I think from the kickoff, they went long into that right corner and Japan found it really hard to exit out of their half for until really after Lee's first try, because you know, they exited, we came back from a line out, went back down a short side, and as you say, like, you know, some really big carries from our big players, and that then probably opens up the space on the opposite side then for Lee to be able to go and get that try. So yeah, look, I do think that Ireland, like Dana especially, controlled the game really, really well today, and look, we know that her boot's a massive thing, but she's also got a lot more camera now, and you can see her directing play and looking for things around how we can continue to move the ball and stuff like that. So yeah, look, I thought their attack has definitely evolved, looked to go back down short sides a lot today. I thought that was really, really good. And yeah, so look, really good game management by her and by the squad as a whole.
I think you forget that, like, she's only 21 years of age, like playing her first ever World Cup at 10 in such a pivotal position. You know, look, her kicking off the tee was flawless and she had a couple of errant kicks out of hand and stuff, but look, you're never going to have a perfect game, but it's great to be trying these things and probing them in games where you do have a little bit of a buffer and we can try things. But no, it is great to see a 10 kind of stepping up and having that creativity and all the rest to bring our backs into the game, because some of the backs we have are world class, like, and you want to get them the ball so they can show that magic.
And following on from that, like you mentioned, only 21, made her debut at 18 in that game against Japan pretty much 3 years ago to the day. Same with Aoife Dalton as well. I'd love if I had time to go back and actually just look at that first game. And
I was
see,
coaching that.
You were, of course. Yeah. See how the two of them were playing in that, and like complete rookies at international level.
100%.
Hannah O'Connor was in with us during the week and talking about, they had Dan O'Brien in the back of the bus on the way to training that week, peppering her with questions about giving her game situations. Yeah, I mean, you can tell us more about it.
Yeah, she was so quiet. Her personality is very quiet off the pitch as well, you know. And you're trying to get her to almost have an alter ego as she crosses the white line, that assertiveness, because she's got a really good rugby brain. And but like she was quiet, you know. And Aoife, it's probably a little bit similar, you know. Pretty overawing thing to do, to be able to go on tour to Japan with a group of strangers that you don't really know, because you've just broken into adult rugby. And, you know, the two of them were 18, just had done their leaving cert. But it was brilliant. My overriding emotion after that game, we'd won that first game and it was in this big, huge stadium. And that Dan O'Brien, you know, finally we had a 10 that could take the international stage by, you know, because she really had a really good temperament for the game. Aoife Dalton is exceptional at what she does. You know, she's this pocket rocket that's incredibly powerful. She carries really, really well. She defends really high. I love how she defends. I think she's Ireland's best defence back in terms of what she does. So it's, for me, it's now more around, they've kept all their same skills. They've obviously got better, lots of them, but it's around their game knowledge and understanding now. That little, like, you know, their understanding of what's happening and how to change that territory into pressure, etc.
They've added layers to their game and depth to their game, which is so, so important in a game like rugby where it is so tactical at times, and it's not just playing off the cuff, it's actually being able to adapt to what teams put out in front of you and how they lay their defence. And particularly impressed by Aoife Dalton as well, playing at 13, such a linchpin position, particularly defensively. That's kind of the area where other teams target to try and free up their wingers and stuff like that. And she's adapted so well. And she's had a number of different centre partnerships kind of throughout her short career and has still managed to kind of be a mainstay in that, and just shows her worth. And again, someone so young, it's brilliant that these are going to be the future of Irish rugby for a long, long time. And they could have 2, 3, maybe even 4 World Cups in them. Like,
how important is it for those two players and pretty much everyone else in that squad as well? It's been spoken about a lot this week that how Cliona Maloney-McDonald was the only player in the entire group who has played at a World Cup before. and you might have had a few questions around how they would have fared just coming into that white hot atmosphere, tournament rugby. I know WXV has given them an opportunity to prepare for it, but they showed no signs of being kind of overawed or phased by the big occasion.
You have to remember, lots of them were at Olympics.
Yeah.
Lots of them have been at Sevens World Cups as well. So the occasion probably, we're probably making more out of it than they are as a group. Does that make sense? And I think chatting to a few of them last week in the Mansion House before they went, they were just really excited to get out and play. And so I think we probably made more out of it, but it was bizarre. It's mad to think that only one player has been to a World Cup before in that big group, because I feel like most of them have been around forever.
Yeah, I do think the WXV tournaments have helped massively, because they feel like a small little tournament where you're going away for weeks at a time, even just preparing Japan
for
tour.
Preparing for the day-to-day camp, hotels.
It's slightly different where you're obviously some are home, some are away. Like, so these tours at least gave them an opportunity to know what it's like to be gone for 3 weeks, to have to play big games back to back to back, because that's the biggest thing about World Cups, and we've seen obviously with the men's as well. It's like how you deal with the adversity of losing a game and having to go into a game straight away next week, or dealing with injury losses in this attritional game and all the rest. And so they've kind of used to that with WXV1, and obviously haven't done so well in WXV1 last year. They're coming in with huge confidence boosts that they're well capable of playing in these kind of tournament formats. Yeah. And we're just really enjoying that it is a World Cup that they get to play in, and obviously because they didn't make 2021. It's just been made a much bigger deal. At the end of the day, as I think it was Niamh Jones who said, they're taking it game by game, week by week, and not trying to get ahead of themselves.
You mentioned the Olympic experience of a handful of those players as well, and I think no one summed that up better than Niamh Higgins today, who was just unbelievable right from the start. She's got her brilliant try herself with that intercept. Big risk, big reward kind of a play, and she got the reward in the end. But her double side steps to put Fiona Chute in for her try in the opening half as well was absolutely just lights out rugby. And I'd love to go back as well and just look at Fiona Chute's line of running to just kind of take out a little player in the build up as well. But also then on Eve Higgins, the other side of the game, where for Bavin Parsons' try before that, she just carries right up to the line, draws back that pass, and it probably sucks in two or three defenders, which gives Emily Costigan an acre of space to play with and eventually score the try from. I suppose just sum up Eve Higgins' performance this afternoon. As good as Brittany Hogan was, I thought Eve was very unlucky not to be player of the match.
Yeah, she was excellent, to be fair, I thought. I talked to a lot of our young players around watching her, because she's a constant threat every time. So she's like what we call like a triple threat. So she's looks like she can run, pass or kick at any stage. So if you ever watch her, she carries the ball loaded. So she's continuously fishing. So if you're a defence, you're like, oh, is she going to pass? Is she going to carry? Puts you on edge. And that's where you find little weak spaces. And that's exactly what happened today. And I think her rugby IQ, for as long as I've known, I think I've met her for the first time when she's about 16 years of age. For as long as I've known her, she's been rugby obsessed. Really, really good student of the game. And, and she takes a lot of pressure off Dana, because she has that ability to play make. You know, you're almost saying to Dana, just give me the ball and you can just, you know, look after what's inside of you. And that allows then us to be able to get the ball to the edge. It's probably what we weren't doing for the last kind of games in the Six Nations and stuff like that. So it's great. It's brilliant to see it. And look, she's such a super player, and really like announced herself on the world stage in the 15s game.
Yeah, she's a great bit of maturity about her as well, and she's good on both sides of the ball, and she's not afraid to be vocal and have that bit of leadership as well, which is great. And she's still relatively young herself, but she's been in Irish rugby setups, I think, since she was about 16 or so, involved with Sevens for a very long time, obviously, as well. And we're starting to see all that experience come to the fore, and a lot of those Sevens girls bringing that experience to this 15s team is brilliant. And, you know, like, as I said, I'm really excited for this tournament and just seeing where this team can go.
Her try specifically, it just broke the game completely. Like, Japan were pushing really hard at the time. They looked certain to score a try in the next few seconds if it wasn't for that intercept. They'd come close. They got the game back to a 14-point match. All of a sudden, they're down around the Irish try line. If they score there with 25 minutes to go, it's a 7-point game. All of a sudden, it starts to get a little bit nervy around Franklin's Gardens. Players start to tighten up ever so slightly. The nerves and the worries start, and the what-ifs start to come in. But all of a sudden, it's a 21-point match again. It's game over.
I think that's the beauty of rugby, though, isn't it? And how quickly a game can turn. It kind of came from Japan's opportunity, came from Ireland getting a little bit too narrow on the wings. And Our scramble D was phenomenal at one point. I think Sam Monaghan tracks back and makes a huge tackle to kind of keep them in it. And then Eve takes that risk, you know, to try and get the intercept and has the gas to go 95 metres and score. And it just gives Ireland that kind of breathing space. Because as you said, if Japan score, it becomes a little bit tetchy and all of a sudden nerves start to kick in. We're expected to win this game and it's not going the way we want and all the rest. But no, that didn't happen, thankfully, and it allowed us to get some more experience with our players coming off the bench and everything else. And so, look, delighted for Eve to get that World Cup try. But even if you look at it, there's a couple of Irish players still working incredibly hard in the background just to make sure we're going to score that try and run those support lines, which is kind of the work ethic of this team. It just really sums up how much they want this and how cohesive they are as a team, that they're going to work for each other right to the very end.
For me, probably the bigger thing around all this is that as... probably the bigger thing around that is that if we're looking around that patch just before just before Japan score, Ireland had moments where they were on the ball, yet their attack shape had kind of lost its way a small bit. They were getting the ball off Dana or off Avine very deep. They didn't really look to go to the line with anything. They looked kind of like they were kind of devoid of any understanding about what they were trying to do for that period, and Japan really soaked that up and they were able to get a couple of turnovers in the middle of the park that put them into position. So that's definitely going to be an area that they're probably going to have to have a look at. If we're, you know, not getting over the gain line after two or three phases and you look up and they have a backfield that are full of players still, like, where is the space? Well, it has to be over in an edge somewhere. And so are we working hard enough to get out? Are we working hard enough to get being square to punch onto the ball? And I thought for about 10 or 12 minutes post that second half, I thought kind of lost their way a small bit, and that invited Japan back on top of us. But then the minute that Eve gets the try, it's almost like, oh great, we're not under pressure now, so we can now play again, if that makes sense. So it's just a funny old little mental game.
It is, and the pressure valve was instantly released after that try, and you could see Japan were completely deflated, Ireland were back on the attack, and they had the disallowed try, but then they scored one a few minutes later to completely kill it off. Can I talk about the defence? Because that was something that Fiona was talking about loads on co-commentary during the game, about just how narrow Ireland were playing. And ultimately it did work because they were aggressive enough off the line to stop Japan getting the ball wide and catching them behind the gain line. But I suppose the question is, on other days, will it be as effective?
I think it's interesting, like, that Ireland did play so narrow, considering we were talking in the studio. Ireland seemed to be playing a 14-1 with only one in the backfield. And so therefore, 14 players in the line, we shouldn't have been getting as narrow as we were. I would have said that we probably had a couple of issues of folding at the right time and in the right areas of the game, like too many people on the blind side not folding up. And that gave Japan a lot of opportunities to move it wide. They may not have executed all the time. And just kind of outside of that, just maybe sometimes shooting up or turning in and you call it pincering kind of in from our wingers at some point. Do we need to make those decisions? And we get away with it against Japan, but against the likes of New Zealand and some of these other bigger teams that we might meet down the line, we need to get those spot on and get our spacing right, or else we could be in a little bit of trouble there. But they're kind of small fixes with a little bit of communication and timing can fix.
Yeah, some of that narrowness is naturally going to happen because the way the attack shape now has gone around, the evolution and stuff, so we're not like edge to edge anymore. You'll often see lots of teams that might go two or three tie phases and let's swing back to the blind. So teams are now really reluctant to overfold players around. So definitely at times I was in my head going, okay, you actually need to fold now, and like Hannah said, probably just didn't do it quick enough. If the outside players are that narrow, there's loads of ways you can probably manufacture a picture that doesn't look like that we're like that, you know what I mean? So a fullback closing high, the edge players continuing to be high as opposed to dropping off, which is kind of what they did at times today as well. And that space then, so you can kind of close high and square, but be almost on your way back. I don't know if I'm able to explain myself but there are ways that they can do it, but they just got to make sure that they're all on the same page. And I didn't think that was the case today at times. But it's a really quick fix, like a very easy fix.
I'm going to mention some individual performances here. We probably don't have enough time to get into each of these players specifically because we're running low on time, but I'll throw out some names here and you can pick up who you want to talk a little bit more about. Brittany Hogan, the official player of the match, 10 carries, 15 tackles, mountain of work got through, particularly when you look at, Aoife Wafer being missing. That was probably a big one. Sam Monaghan with another huge shift as well. 15 carries, played the full 80 minutes as well, 11 tackles. Fiona Chute, who you were talking about on commentary, importantly showed that versatility, dropping back from the second row to the back row, and looked really, really comfortable there throughout. We mentioned Dan O'Brien, so we can probably skip over her. And I thought Cliona Maloney-McDonald as well, off the bench, just wanted to get on the ball so much. 20 minutes played, 8 carries, and every single time she got in possession, she looked really, really eager to get over the gain line. Bounced a couple of players off it as well. Who out of those do you want to talk a little bit more about? Or is there anyone I haven't mentioned there you want to bring up?
Look, I think I mentioned it in commentary as well. Like, just bench impact is so important. Like, World Cups are so attritional. You're going to need to use, we've 32 players in the squad. Not everyone will be guaranteed minutes, but it is great to see people getting minutes and getting that World Cup experience and then just having an impact and showing what they can do and why they're there. And so, as you said, Cliona was brilliant on the ball. I think she bossed someone out of the way at one point, and then like Enya Breen scoring with her first touch. Brilliant to be in there, another who can come in and boss the game. And I think that's so important to give kind of whole squad confidence and all the rest, that everybody kind of plays a big part in it. And I presume over the next couple of games we'll see a few changes, and hopefully more people can kind of put their hands up for when we get further down the line.
Yeah, absolutely. I thought the bench were really, really good when they came on. And but I thought from that starting team, I suppose, we'd spoken around Brittany before the game, and probably the wider public don't really know who she is, only because when you've got back rows the likes of Wayfair and Aaron King, it's always going to be hard to get any sort of attention. But she's been the glue that holds that group together for a long time in terms of her work rate.
And has been for a few years.
Yeah, insatiable work rate, like genuinely like proper workhorse, but also really smart rugby player, like genuinely such a smart rugby player. And you know, they're the type of players that you need in this kind of a tournament where it's like week in, week out. And you know, you get to week three, players are going to be tired and crabby and whatever, and it's somebody like that that's going to continue to put her body where you wouldn't put your boot in. And she will do that for you every single day, in every training session, in every match. She just 100% player, and like, we need them. And she was exceptional today.
You could see how much the game took it out of her as well, because when the camera was on her, when she was getting named as player of the match, she had her, but pretty much her head between her legs and in her hands, just absolutely gassed out of the game. And it took her a couple of minutes, I think, to realise what she'd just been awarded, with players slapping her on the back. Before we finish up, let's talk about possible changes for Spain. I know it's very early in the week at this stage. We're still 7 days out from it. But the win today has probably given them a little bit of scope to not make mass changes, but it's given them a bit of flexibility to work with.
Yeah, look, I suppose, probably for me, in my eyes, Sam Monaghan or Adele McMahon, purely from a load management point of view. Yeah. Both of those coming back off the back of injuries and stuff like that. I'm sure Scott and his coaching ticket have kind of thought about this and kind of pre-planned and all the rest. But at some point, I think they will definitely get some sort of a rest. I could see maybe there in the second row or back row, you kind of see a shift there, just to, not a tactics point of view, just give them a little bit of a rest so you have them for the big games going down the line.
Yeah, and you don't want to take your eye off the ball this week. If you're, you know, you don't want to be thinking too far ahead at New Zealand.
They'd be fine. I would expect to see a few changes, to be honest. I think while you want to keep continuing momentum, competition within the squad is something that we've never had before. Genuinely, like, we've got 32 players there that could easily all be playing, which is not something that we've said very often. And so I'd like to see, you know, a couple of the younger ones, Beth Buttermer getting in for her first cap. You know, I think Spain's a really good opportunity to expose her in case anything happens down the line from a World Cup point of view. I think from a, you know, maybe Molly Scuff comes into with Emily Lane, etc., in terms of load management. But the way they're all playing and training at the moment, from chatting to them, chatting to some of the coaches, like, they're all in peak performance, like, ready to go. So, like, I don't think, if you change a couple of bodies there, I'm not really sure it's going to make a massive difference, because I do think the level of player now is actually quite high in terms of what wasn't playing today. So that's I'm just so excited for that already. Like, genuinely, I think it's a brilliant opportunity, and a brilliant opportunity to expose some of those younger players to a World Cup experience.
And it's really good to have that healthy competition there to actually drive each other on and not just be like, okay, I've made it to a World Cup now and I'm happy enough to sit here and just enjoy the experience. Like, they all want to be there and to play and to put their hands up. And it's good if you have a certain jersey now, it's not yours forever and you're being pushed all the way. So, like, if one of those youngsters like Beth Buttermer coming through has a really good performance, that's then pushing Cliona Maloney-McDonald to go, well, geez, I need to up my game to make sure I'm in here for the next game. And that only makes the squad better as a whole. And then it's only a good thing, and it's a great, great position to be in, because as Niamh said, it's been a very long time since we've probably able to say that we have that depth.
Yeah, it's a very good position to be in. Ireland 42-14 winners against Japan in their opening Rugby World Cup Pool C match. Thanks to Niamh and Hannah for staying on and doing an RT Rugby podcast with us. We will have another one midweek next week when we have a bit more sense of what's coming down the line with Spain. Any injuries picked up this weekend? On the face of it, it all looks good. But for now, from the RT Rugby podcast, we'll speak to you again soon.